What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week we are getting extreme on the threequel. We'll do it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of the threequel. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, here with me this week. Mike Duranik and Brad Miller both giving me bad looks for the cold open. I just wanted to do one that was the quality of this film, so I thought it would be appropriate that I went with that much just right on the nose cheesiness. Gentlemen, how are you doing this evening as we get ready to talk about Twister?
Well, you ruined my evening with the with that cold open. You normally bring it, and then I don't know where that one was going, but you kind of saved it by saying that you're trying to match the quality of the film, so I can appreciate your effort there. So I'm doing well, thanks for asking.
And Ethan, I just find myself confused because the cold open felt a little like weaker than normal, but then you said you were just trying to match the quality of the film. So what all I can interpret is that you must believe that that was an A++ cold open to match this. I am just ecstatic to talk about this fine piece of filmmaking with you guys.
Well, this is definitely not what one would call high art, but we will get into it. Yes, we are talking 1996's Twister, starring Helen Hunt and the late great Bill Paxton. Gentlemen, I'll start it as I always do. I'll ask you the question: what was your first experience with Twister? Was it in the theaters in 1996? Mine definitely wasn't. Was it later? I know this had a big following in the 90s, so I'd be surprised if neither of you saw it in theaters. But what was it? What was your first experience?
I'm not 100% sure, but I do. I had some recollection of seeing this in the theater. So if I didn't, I saw it shortly after, like a Blockbuster rental or something. But I do believe that I saw this one in the theater.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with Brad. For some reason, I think I saw it in the theater, and it's right in that range where it's totally possible I could have saw it in the theater, the summer that it came out. In 96, but if I didn't, it was probably not just a Blockbuster rental, but then I am like 99% certain as a Blockbuster purchase on one of the pre-used tapes back in the day when that was the way you built your VHS collection, was to buy the tapes once they, went from having 40 copies and only needing two. So this was a highly watched movie through the back half of the 90s on the old VHS machine, for sure.
Well, my first experience with it was about 4 hours ago. Fired it up when I got home from work. I had not seen this. Oh, Brad, why do you look so shocked?
What?
To clarify, Brad, that does mean he's seen Red Eye like 47 times, but had never made time to watch Twister.
How? This is one of those that somehow makes its way into my viewing roughly about every year. Part of it is because, my wife and other people I hang around kind of enjoy the corniness of it and just love it for what it is. So they always want to watch it. But yeah, I've seen this one several times. I just can't believe it's never made it onto your screen.
Am I the only person who forces their like loved ones to watch this once a year in preparation for tornado season?
Oh my God. No, I can tell you, I've seen the dinner scene 15 times because this thing's on TV nonstop. This thing's always on something. And I have always flipped through the channel as they are at Meg's for the dinner scene. Did I just say aunt, whatever? I don't know what I just said out loud. Words are tough sometimes. So I've seen that a lot. I've just never finished it or just never gone back to it. And I know that it's always been like, it's Twister, man. It's one of the great action movies of the 90s and the special effects in it. But again, we'll get into that. yeah, I don't know. It just always was a blind spot for me. I saw it here, and we'll get into it aplenty, because the next thing we're going to do is play the Rotten Tomatoes game. This week, it's my turn to try to dethrone Mike. He won last week in a very weird fashion. Neither Mike nor Brad were anywhere close to the sitting score for Da Vinci Code, but that was a pretty – it was pretty shocking that the critics went as hard in the paint as they did. So, Mike – a little redemption for you. I know that you beat yourself up if you don't get it exactly right. So here's another opportunity. What's the Rotten Tomatoes score for Twister?
Well, I honestly think that now I've got an even better badge of honor, which is that I managed to win even though I was like 40 points off last week. So that's fairly impressive. All right, Twister, I'm going to say, I feel like my analysis last week from the Da Vinci Code is basically spot on with this one. And so, but to try to make it a tougher call for you, I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to fresh is at 60. Is that right?
Yeah. Fresh is 60.
All right, I'm going to go 61. So I'm going to give you everything fresh and under, and then, or you can choose over fresh. There you go.
Okay. I mean, because I know what this is, I think this is going to be in the same vein as Backdraft. Special effects, had a cult following, action movie, things like that. So I'm going to go with 62 and hope that the critics landed it in the 70s.
Brad? Yeah, I should have thought of that. That's a good point.
So I'm convinced that Mike threw last week by 40 points just so we don't believe he's a cheating bastard, because he hit this one right on the head at 61. It is 61%, and I'm going to go to my grave, believe this game, just to have bragging rights. Like, or either that, or like maybe Jenny, his wife, is looking at these scores and just whispering them in his ear at night, because he said 61, and it took everything in me to not just call bullshit when he said that. So, 61%.
Continue the stupidest game in podcast history.
Well, gentlemen, on to Cleveland.
Wow. I mean, it's impressive. It is. It's impressive. Well done.
Well, so, Mike, I'll let you kick us off then, 61% being the sitting score, and ask it, as I have been recently, simply, is Rotten Tomatoes right? Is 61% where this movie should be living? Box office wise, it made, again, remember, this is 96, it made $500 million. So this was a resounding success back then. But 61%, is that correct?
Well, as we're going to talk about when we get to my favorite scene later, I won't spoil it. I'm fairly confident that my favorite scene will not be what you guys have. But this was really, in many ways, the quintessential 90s action film. There's your $13 word for today's podcast, Brad. And so here's what I would say, right? In 1996, when this movie came out, a 61 drastically underestimates what this movie was at that period of time. Here, as we sit here in 2022, 61's probably about right, because while the special effects were pretty substantial at the time, they have not held up. And the corniness, unfortunately, has held up. So it lost ground in what was its strongest selling point, and has continued to be held steady by what is its weakest part.
So you're asking if I believe 61 is correct?
Yeah.
I mean, for quality of the film, yeah, I think it is. I would score it higher just based on entertainment. I would score it higher based on where it holds a place in, you know, the memories you think back of times you've watched it and things you've been doing, people you've been hanging out with to see it. Like, it's a neat trip down memory lane, I guess. So I would have ranked it higher than that, which my rankings for our podcast would reflect that too, because yeah, this is definitely a cheesy, corny, not well-written movie, but somehow they pull it off to make it watchable year in and year out, because I probably see this about once a year, and I mean, not enough to knock off Red Eye for the champion there, but yeah, definitely seen it a lot. So I would probably put it in the low 70s if I were ranking it myself.
So it's interesting. I feel like Mike and I are going to walk away from this experience with two completely different senses of satisfaction. But I think they're right. I think they're dead on. I would say, as an action adventure 90s disaster movie, this movie has to be fresh. But I can't give it anything more than saying it's fresh on the Rotten Tomatoes score, because this was written by a full-blown piss drunk person. Like, the things that go on in this movie, which is actually, it's crazy. I don't do, Mike, do you know th is this a book?
No, but it was written by Michael Crichton,
Right,
or
that's
at least
what.
in large part, before it was adapted. I think they had Joss Whedon come in for a period of time. I saw his name popped up to
Wow.
help with some of the rewrites. And but it was it basically, as I understand it, I think Spielberg went to Crichton and said, "Hey, I think that we should make a movie about tornadoes."
Okay.
I think in the early versions, and but at any rate, however it ended up, Crichton wrote the initial treatment of it, I believe.
Well, Crichton must have been going through a tough time in life and was hammered, because the thing, the reason, like, it's fresh. Like, it got to a point. I guess this is where I'm at. I think had I watched this more as a kid, it wouldn't bother me. Now, seeing it for the first time in 2022 as an almost 27-year-old, even for me, and I'll watch bad movies. Mike, I loved watching Executive Decision a couple weeks ago when I was in the middle of a Kurt Russell binge. It's not great, but I loved it. This, like, the cow, oh my God. Like, I think that's what it was too. And we can talk about Bill Paxton. Like, Bill Paxton, I see him as Morgan Earp. I see him as the other Marine in Aliens, as a leading man who is kind of supposed to be the straight man, at least when he first comes on screen. And then it devolves into there's a house rolling down the road and we're going in. Like, I legit, I had to pause it when I was watching. I was like, that he did not say that in that tone. That didn't happen. And it did. So I was entertained, and I'm not saying I wouldn't watch it again, but oh dear God, the cheesiness was heaped on a little more than even I can handle at this point in my life.
So a couple of things you may find interesting if Wikipedia is to be trusted. So it was Spielberg who was pre his company was presented the original like 10-page concept idea, was intrigued by it. He pursued Crichton to have Crichton write the initial script. Crichton and his wife were paid a reported $2.5 million to write the screenplay, which made it the single most expensive screenplay ever written at the time that they wrote it. Joss Whedon was brought in to rewrite the script, but then contracted bronchitis, and someone else was brought in, and then another person was brought in, and so this thing went through several reworks before it ended up where it did. And similarly for the directors, they went through like half a dozen directors they wanted to look at before they landed on the guy who directed it. So for a very successful box office movie,
Yeah, that
quite
went through a
frankly,
lot.
given through how much it went through, it actually ended up fairly successful compared to a lot of movies that have that many rewrites, that many directors' hands in it.
Yeah, it would fall apart today. If something went through that much, there's no way that it would be successful. Also, can we touch on the what I felt like was out of nowhere, horrifying death at the end of this movie? Homeboy taking that telephone pole or whatever, just straight through the windshield. Like, there was just it that's it felt like at times they were just like, you know what, we haven't seen yet someone get decapitated, we should throw a light post through that windshield and
Yeah,
have the truck explode because Carrie Elwes is a dickhead. Like,
and at
it
that
was,
moment, didn't you think like, did they bring Michael Bay in just for that scene?
yes, 100%. Brad, what when you think back on like the cheesiness then rewatching it this time, like how does that stuff work for you with how much you've loved the movie for as long as you have, or at least had an enjoyment of it?
Well, I will say this is the first time it really stood out. I will say I enjoyed the cheesiness so much that it's going to be one of the cheesy lines is my favorite line of this film when we get to that portion of the show when you know if you ask if there's any line that stood out to us. But I think that the movie's spot on for that. I think if this movie had taken itself too seriously, it would have become a more of like a horror film with the monster being the tornado. And I think if you don't level it out with some of the cheesiness and, Philip Seymour Hoffman and the what did I call her in this one? I forget. A wet Dr. Melissa Reeves is, the wet blanket when she pops up at first there. Like, I think if you don't, if they don't cast Philip Seymour Hoffman and they don't have some of the corniness and they don't have Bill Paxton trying to do his best, CSI impersonation when he's delivering these cheesy lines, like, I don't think this movie's as good as it turned out to be. I think that's kind of what made it what it was. It gave it its personality. It made it a fun, entertaining summer movie rather than people leaving the theaters horrified with these deaths and, why would these people chase these tornadoes? It helped us relate to the characters and it helped us relate to the people and care more about them putting their lives in peril to save others than I think if it would have been serious and menacing like it could have been.
I think that they did a really actually quite a good job in a very simplistic way. So you think about how they introduce the bad guys, right? I mean, is there a more like just blatant obvious, oh, we need a villain, so we're just going to have him roll on by and have our lead character basically just give the synopsis of him. I'm going to call him a snake. I'm going to say he's do it, but he's not in it for the love.
Well, I think, yeah, like it felt like they were writing the movie and they were like, well, we like all the characters we have, but no one has died and someone probably should die. And we can't kill Aunt Meg. Let's cast Cary Elwes. He can die. Like that's kind of, and I'll tell you what, I was convinced at the end of it when they tie themselves to the water line or whatever, which totally, whatever. But at that point, logic's gone. It's fine. We've driven through a house. It's whatever. I totally expected the ghost of her father to be in that storm. I really, really thought that we were just gonna send it and they were gonna like hold hands one last time. I because the way the music started to change, it was like, oh my dear God, like her dad's gonna be in there. I was and I ended up being a little disappointed that he wasn't. I really wanted him to just send it even more, but her being Helen Hunt, and we can now, I mean, we talk a little bit more about Brad. You mentioned Philip Seymour Hoffman, the MVP of the movie, of course, just fully selling the zaniness of it. His interactions with Melissa Reeves were eons better than Bill Paxton's interactions. But the leads are Bill Paxton, Helen Hunt. And I'm curious, we talk about this, and I don't know what your guys's knowledge is of both of them. I'm sure Bill Paxton a little bit more, but we talk about peaks. This movie being as famous as it is, would you label this a peak for either of our two leads? And are you even a fan of either of these two leads?
I don't know enough about Bill Paxton to have a strong opinion, but I guess for me, this would be his peak because if you say name something Bill Paxton's in, I'm going Twister every time. Like, I don't know that anything else would come to mind for this. If you say the same thing about Helen Hunt, for me, it's Mad About You, and I think that that would have to be her peak. I think she's fascinating in this. Like I think she did great. I think her Philip Seymour Hoffman and Alan Ruck actually to me stole the film. Alan Ruck playing Rabbit. Like those three, especially Philip Seymour Hoffman acted circles around everybody else in this thing. Like he put on an acting class in such subtle ways that I just walked away so impressed with him. And then Alan Ruck, in the small parts that he had, just to me stole some scenes there, you know, with directing through the peril and questioning some of their decisions that they were making. I think he did a great job. But Helen Hunt also, I think, held her own very much. She knew, you knew exactly what she was thinking and feeling about their relationship, and the struggle that she was having with this and the feelings that she had when she looked at him. She did such a great job with the emotions, with the body language, with the facial expressions. And then you have Bill Paxton just almost in a juxtaposition of, what is this corn nut doing? Like, you know, it was just almost laughable at times. And I chuckle every time I've repeated my favorite line in this film probably about 20 times this week, and I chuckle every time because of the face that he makes when he delivers it. And I just don't, I don't know. I don't think he's that great of an actor, I guess, but there might be some things that he's been in that would prove me wrong. But I think those three for sure stood out to me.
Yeah, I think ultimately, as corny as the lines are, it does hide not a bad cast, which is probably what makes the corniness work. Bill Paxton, I think the interesting thing about this for Paxton in his career is he is a classic member of the cast who does a solid job, but put in a lead role here, right? And so for me, when I think of Bill Paxton, I think of Tombstone and I think of Apollo 13 also, but this is definitely his lead in my mind. Helen Hunt, great job. When I think of her, I think of As Good As It Gets, which I think came out maybe a year or two after this, and garnered her some Academy Award recognition. Did she win for that, or was she nominated?
It was the very next year and she won.
Okay. So that's where my mind goes with her, you know, but then the entire supporting cast along with them, I think, just delivered perfectly. Even to Cary Elwes, who played the slime ball that at the end, when the tornado picks up his car, you're not like super torn up, right? So he delivers on it as well. So I do think the casting was pretty good. Even Dr. Melissa Reeves, I think, delivered exactly what her character was supposed to be.
Yeah, I Mike, I agree with you on Helen Hunt. I'm a huge Helen Hunt fan. As Good As It Gets, I love that movie. I that's a movie I try to watch once a year. A huge fan of that. What Women Want is like one of my like all time underrated romantic comedies. That goes into like how much I enjoy Mel Gibson too, but she's so great in it. I think this, and for enjoying her, I also do love Mad About You. I've not ever sat and like watched the entire thing, but when I would see reruns of it growing up, that was one of the sitcoms I would enjoy seeing come on. This is actually, I think, a good precursor for she wins the Academy Award the next year, because as cheesy as this movie is, as bad as some of the dialogue is, kind of just going with what you said, Brad, she gives a really actually a strong performance, I think. Like the emotion that she's conveying between her and Bill Paxton acting off of the zaniness, I think, is really good. And it's not a shock to see literally just a year later, and for her scheduling, just a couple months later, she's going into filming As Good As It Gets next to Jack Nicholson, and Greg Kinnear also won an award for that movie too. So not surprising at all that she had that in her. She's fantastic. Bill Paxton, no one ever accused him of trying to win an Academy Award. I think if I had to pick, I'd say his performance in Apollo 13 is the best. As much as I love Tombstone, not some of the greatest scenes of acting. Slightly awkward death scene in that. Sorry, spoiler alert for a 20-year-old movie. 30-year-old movie. But yeah, and Mighty Joe Young. Never forget Mighty Joe Young.
So just random piece of internet trivia that, again, I have not like vetted to see if it's true. But do you guys know who was the original choice for the lead male role in this before it went to Bill Paxton? Brad is nodding yes.
I hope it was Kurt Russell, if it just made you think about it from Tombstone. But if it's not him, I do not know.
Brad, did you have the name?
Well, I think that the answer is Garth Brooks. I saw that he was cast and was supposed to be cast in this and turned it down, but I don't know if it was for the lead role or not.
So they did talk about Garth Brooks in it, but it was not for the lead role. It actually connects with our podcast from last week, because how different would this movie have been had Tom Hanks agreed to do it as they were in the discussion?
Yeah, no, that once again, don't just because Tom Hanks is good doesn't mean we need to put him in everything. And that would have not. No.
I agree. I think that as I look at the list of people who were considered, the only one I could say that might have done the Bill Paxton role justice in terms of the corniness and the over the top and driving through the house is absolutely the one and only Nicolas Cage.
Oh yeah, that would have been great. But now I'm telling you right now, you should have given me Garth Brooks. That I would have come in with a whole different tone for this podcast if we'd have seen the greatest American entertainer.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, though, I think he could have actually pulled it off. Like after I saw that he had turned this movie down, thinking, well, if this was for Bill Paxton's role, like I think he could have pulled that off pretty easily.
Mike, I think you'd be proud. Not even a week ago, I got to sit 100 feet from Garth Brooks as he sang Piano Man to a crowd of almost 100,000. So it was quite. I thought of you as soon as he started playing. I was like, you know what, this is
well,
what it needs to be. But
that is good. God willing, in a month and 12 days, I'm going to sit significantly farther away from the Piano Man as he plays Piano Man at Notre Dame Stadium. Yep. So
I figured you'd probably be there. Let's do one more piece of trivia before we get into favorite scenes and some things like that. Mike, you mentioned that the guy that directed this was about the sixth, 10th, 15th, 20th choice. Do you guys know the movie he directed leading into this that I think would have set him up for a little bit more success? Very, very classic 90s action film. One we haven't done, but it's up there as one of the 90s action film.
I have no idea.
Speed.
Oh.
Our director, his name, John DeBont, not, it sounds similar to an infamous name, but John DeBont.
And Denis Villeneuve.
Not Denis Villeneuve. But yes, he directed Speed, then this, which is a pretty fantastic start to your career. Whether or not I think this movie's corny, made a half of it, I was off to the races. And then did Speed 2. And then did Lara Croft. And hasn't done anything since. So he burned bright to start his career. And did not bounce back. But hey, you know what? If I ever got a chance to direct a movie and I kicked off with something as successful as Speed and Twister, I would go home and sleep on my bed of money and not worry about the rest of my career. Let's talk favorite scene, guys. I know you two obviously have a ton of love for this movie, and I have love for certain parts of it. I definitely do have a favorite scene, but I am curious, where are you guys going to go with your favorite scene from Twister?
Okay, so as promised, I'm confident that neither of you are going to pick this scene because in reality, it's a rather odd one to pick. But as I rewatched it, my favorite scene was the roll credits. And the reason I'm going with that is not because of what you think, where I'm saying, thank God it's over. It's because that ending scene, there's something about it with the way that, I think we've seen enough. And then they kiss and everybody's partying and having a good time and celebrating. And the camera zooms out and swoops around and the music is playing. And there's just something about that that just feels like the ultimate end of it. That is how they ended 90s action flicks. I mean, that's very similar to how they ended The Rock, right? Zoom out after, honey, do you want to see who really killed JFK? And you zoom out and you've got this somewhat uplifting, music with the sunlight on the horizon. And so what it also made me think is that music was playing is really the underrated star of this is the soundtrack. I mean, you had some solid Van Halen in there. You had Goo Goo Dolls in there. You had some solid 90s tracks to make this a good soundtrack. And so, yeah, I didn't steal any of your final or favorite scenes, right?
You did not.
So, but that was it. And not for the reason you'd think. I think culminated the movie in a way that made me go, this was a satisfying 90s action movie, and I will look forward to watching it again.
Yeah, my answer is going to be a little bit different too. And it's going to be any scene that Philip Seymour Hoffman was in. Like he is this movie to me. He, I don't know. There's just something about that Dusty character that when I think about Twister, I think about Long Way Down playing while they're chasing after that storm. I think of Philip Seymour Hoffman and I think of the we've got cows line there, you know, like that's not my favorite line, but that's one that stands out. But yeah, I think he kills it. Mike, you nailed it with the soundtrack stuff. Like there's the they cast, I'll say it that way, they cast very well when they made this soundtrack because it in some ways really just delivers in some ways that some of the actors don't. So but yeah, I'm just gonna say any scene that Philip Seymour Hoffman is in.
My favorite scene is the first tornado that they chase. I like that this movie just got off the ground pretty quick. No pun intended. Maybe pun intended. Let's say pun intended. I like that they just went for it, and the fact I love the team coming together scenes in movies when it's done well, and the fact that it's just like, oh, Bill Paxton's back. We've got the full squad. Him and Joe are gonna go together. I love their arguing. That I thought was really funny, and the music playing, they go from the rock song to the overture and all that stuff. And I just like how, as cheesy as this movie was, I totally bought the fact that when these people are together, they really are the best of the best. They sold that really well. Like these guys, you know, they can look at the angle of the tornado and they're gonna get there and they're gonna get behind it. And Cary Elwes's group is basically as competent as if the three of us tried to go out there and chase a tornado, right? Like, I totally bought into that. I love that. I love the team dynamic there. I love their arguing. So just that opening chase, leading into the truck getting picked up was my favorite scene. Any lines, guys, that stood out to you from Twister?
Yeah, I've been dying to share mine, and it was when Helen Hunt starts talking about Bill Paxton's new truck, and she's talking about the insurance on it, and he very eloquently looks right at the camera and goes, "Liability only," and it is just such a stupid, corny line, and he delivers it in such an awful way that it stood out, and I laughed out loud when he says liability only, and then she's like, "Huh, liability only," and then just kind of scoffs at it. Like it just, I don't know. It to me was one of those lines. It's like, okay, I see what they're doing with Bill Paxton here, and it was not to be a taken serious leading man. And I should have known that when he slaps off Cary Elwes's hat when he's angry with him. He runs over there and basically calls him a no good jerk and slaps his hat off. Like it was just not a very corny role, but that was his corny line that stole the show for me.
Because Billy is the extreme. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine having a nickname like the extreme? And then somebody asks your fiance who's never heard this before, why do you know, we'll put Ethan, you in this role. You know, Brad, why do you call Ethan the extreme? And Brad just says, because Ethan is the extreme. I mean, it's again, it's the way that Philip Seymour Hoffman delivers that. And I could pick any number of other Philip Seymour Hoffman lines, him talking about the suck zone. You can go on and on and on. I mean, may he rest in peace. It's taken from us too soon. But this movie, as corny, as terrible as some parts of it are, I mean, he is a tour de force in it. And it is, again, an example of how gifted of an actor he was that he can. You know, take something like what Capote and make that into something, and then take something like this and make it into something, and then be in the Hunger Games and be the best part of that. And like
Yep.
the guy was incredible.
I'll go down a little bit different road. I think it's anything that Dr. Melissa Reeves said that made me out loud go, "What the fuck are we doing?" Most notably, the two most notable ones were when you used to tell me you chased tornadoes, deep down, I just thought it was a metaphor. Quite possibly the stupidest thing anyone says in this movie. And then just the over the top. And I knew, this is the thing, I knew that somehow a flying cow was a part of this movie. I had no idea what it was. But it just gliding across and her going, I can't talk right now, Julie. We have cows. That was, it's like, all right. She got paid a lot of money to say that. And you know what? Good on her. I wish I got paid that much money to say something like that in a movie. But yeah, anything that she said got me pretty good.
So Mikey listed several parts. That's not the right word I'm looking for here. Several roles that Philip Seymour Hoffman had. I'll tell you though, the one that anytime someone brings him up, the one that I remember, it stands out, is from Along Came Polly when he shoots that basketball and he says, making it rain. Like it is perfect. And watching those basketball scenes with him and Ben Stiller in that movie, I love Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he just kills it in any scene that he's in. Such a good actor.
I will die on this hill. The opening 5 minutes of Mission Impossible 3, there has never been a better bad guy in any action movie than the monologue he gives threatening to kill Tom Cruise's wife. There's no way that anyone else other than Philip Seymour Hoffman can do something that good in movies that are just so over the top as Mission Impossible.
While we're on the topic too, one movie that I love that I just don't like him in at all, and I don't like his part, is in The Big Lebowski. For some reason, I just can't see him in that part, and it's always bothered me. So, but yeah, I mean, I know this is about Twister, not Philip Seymour Hoffman, but I'm sure we'll do several more of his movies in the future.
I'll never have a problem waxing poetic about Philip Seymour Hoffman. I did mention just now when we were talking about him, a Tom Cruise film, which is what we're going to do next week, because next week, everyone, it's a pretty big moment for me personally. We were talking about Top Gun because for Memorial Day weekend, Top Gun Maverick is hitting theaters. I'm doing my best to manage expectations. It's sitting at 100% right now on Rotten Tomatoes with like 70 reviews. Not the original Top Gun, the new one. And basically everyone has said that the new one is one of the greatest films of all time. So again, managing expectations, I'm only expecting it to live up to that hype. We will see. But even if it doesn't, we're still about the original Top Gun next week on the threequel. But that'll be then. This week was Twister. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.